Good morning. Satkar Hospitality versus Rogers. Ms. De Silva?
Thank you, and may it please the Court. The main issues in this appeal are whether absolute immunity applies to the Cook County Board of Appeals, Board of Review, and its elected commissioners and staff. Judge Matthew Canelli ruled that absolute immunity should not extend to the Cook County Board of Review. This appeal is from Judge Canelli's ruling granting immunity to the commissioners and their individual and their staff, the individual board defendants. An analysis of immunity has to, I believe, start with a discussion of Butts versus Economy, in which the Supreme Court decided that immunity goes to function and not title. That court used six criteria. The six criteria were used to determine whether an agency's officials' functions are equivalent to that of a judge. Not one of those criteria applies to the Board of Review defendants, or for that matter, to the Board of Review. There are no safeguards to ensure against unconstitutional conduct, such as in this case. There is no check or balance on the board at the state or county level. It already enjoys essentially unfettered absolute authority as to its processes. There's no check as to whether its processes would be unconstitutional or not. In this case, the Board of Review defendants announced that they can, quote, do whatever they want, and actually proceeded to do so. Neither the Property Tax Appeals Board, PTAB, nor the circuit courts look at unconstitutional process, the actual processes of the Board of Review. Third criteria under Butts is whether an entity or its members are free from political influence. The Board of Review is one of the most political entities in Illinois. Each of the commissioner defendants and many of their staff have accumulated millions of dollars in campaign contributions from the same attorneys and law firms that practice before them. Unlike a judge, they don't recuse themselves or guard against bias and interest. Last summer, the United States Attorney arrested two of the staff of Commissioner Larry Rogers' office for the solicitation of bribery, campaign donations, in exchange for tax reductions. Far from being free from political influence, all three of the commissioners named in this suit during the pendency of the suit ran for other elected office using the campaign funds garnered from the tax lawyers and firms that practiced before them. Fourth criteria of Butts calls for an examination of whether the entity or individuals adhere to precedent. There is no precedent in the decision-making process used at the Board of Review or by the Board of Review defendants. In this case, the defendants admitted that no precedent and no criteria were used in their decision.
Ms. De Silva, let me ask you a couple of questions, if I could. One, does the review board confer privately, or are its meetings subject to the open door law?
Their meetings are subject to the open notice policy, I believe it's called, Your Honor. And in this case, it does not really abide by. It does whatever it wants to.
That's not really my question. My question is whether the law allows it to engage in private deliberations.
Yes, Your Honor.
It does. Okay. Second, I know you're about halfway through the Butts against Economy factors. I think all of us are familiar with them. Let me simply ask whether we could rule in your favor on the individual immunity question here without overruling HIDA.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, Hyde, and I never pronounce it properly, Hyden versus Pettinger is distinguishable from this case, because in Hyde, the Tazewell County Board of Review actually did perform an investigation. Their commissioners and staff actually went to the plaintiff's property in that case and just corrected an error in square footage. They issued a ruling and a finding of fact. They provided reasons and rationale for their ruling. And even more importantly, the Tazewell County Board of Review held a hearing at which they, during which they made the decision. During this hearing, the plaintiff, Hayden Hyde, was allowed to be present and present evidence about the value of his property. In this case, the Board of Review defendants made their decision prior to the hearing. During the hearing, they were only concerned about and made it clear that they would only be concerned about the plaintiff's association or alleged association with Illinois State Representative
Paul. It sounds like what you're saying is that whether there is quasi-judicial immunity depends upon how the particular case was handled, because the two boards of review are authorized, as I understand it, by essentially identical statutes, right? And the argument you're making suggests that if the Cook County Review Board had simply used processes a little more formal in your client's case, then there would be no, then judicial immunity would be available. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, but it is all in the process. It is the process that provides the procedural safeguards against constitutional violations. The process is, in effect, everything, and there was no proper process in this case.
You can make the same argument for lots of mistaken judgments by trial courts in every state in the union, and that doesn't eliminate judicial immunity for questions of individual liability. If I could, I'd like to ask you about an issue that is addressed, a case that is addressed in the Haida opinion.
Yes, sir.
I don't believe it's been raised by the parties, but it's something that I believe we need to raise ourselves. The case is called, the acronym is FARE, F-A-R-E, against McNary, 454 U.S. 100, decided in 1981. It was discussed at some length in the Haida opinion, and it holds that there can be no Section 1983 damages action for alleged constitutional violations in administering a state tax system. Now, that's not a question of absolute immunity for local government entities, which is a highly problematic argument that the defense has made. But it is a much narrower ground for dismissing damages claims against the Board of Review.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may try to address that, it's unclear because the court in Hayden did not give a rationale or any analysis, really, of its basis for granting immunity. It's difficult to know how it interpreted
the question. I'm talking about immunity for the board, not individual board members.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not talking about a sweeping concept of local governments being entitled to absolute immunity. The Supreme Court's been pretty clear on that subject. But in the case of state taxes, we have the McNary case saying, in effect, we know that there's the Anti-Injunction Act, the Tax Anti-Injunction Act, that prevents injunctions almost all federal court injunctions that would interfere with state tax systems. But McNary says that the Tax Anti-Injunction Act was essentially codifying an older concept of comity between the federal government and the states, and that we're not going to interfere with their state tax system by issuing damages awards against state taxing authorities. Now, it's not in the briefs, but it's something I think we need to consider and would invite your thoughts.
Your Honor, would that really, at this juncture, because we're dealing with the threshold issue of immunity and whether this suit could ever have been brought the board could ever have been hailed into court in the first instance.
That's what McNary is about. Now, McNary does say that its rule applies only as long as there are plain, efficient, and speedy remedies through the state laws and courts. Obviously, you have a sweeping indictment of the Illinois property tax system, but I'm not aware of any federal cases that would authorize us to hold that there is not a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy provided by law, even if you're unhappy with the current office holders, even if you don't trust them. There is a system in place, and the federal court should stay out of it rather than becoming substitute review boards for Cook County and perhaps all of Illinois.
But, Your Honor, there would still not be an expedient or really any remedy at the state level, either in PTAB or the circuit court, to examine the unconstitutional process in this case, because PTAB does not consider those issues, and the circuit court would use a clear and convincing standard in which the presumption would go, even though it would not be de novo, the presumption would go in favor of the board, which issued a ruling without any basis for the ruling. So were the plaintiffs to go to circuit court, Your Honor, there would be nothing that they would be...
You could have gone there in the first instance, right, after the review board? Isn't that an option?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's wrong with that?
Because, Your Honor, it is not a forum for constitutional
The Illinois violations. Circuit courts are not forums for constitutional claims?
The Illinois circuit courts, under the statute, review the decisions of the Board of Review. They review the tax decisions. And while under a process of administrative review, they may entertain procedural problems, if we were to raise them, if the plaintiffs were to have raised them, they would have to meet the burden of clear and convincing, and it would not be possible, because there was no ruling or rationale offered, it would be very difficult for the plaintiffs, if not impossible, to argue as to the real reason why their property rate was adjusted, because the real reason had nothing to do with the characteristics of the property,
Can you direct us to any federal court authority that would justify this degree of interference with the state property tax system?
Perhaps, Your Honor, yes, the Civil Rights Act, because of all the functional components of BUTS, which aren't...
Talking about Section 1983?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's the point
that's
of the McNary case.
That's a little too broad.
The point of the McNary case and the Supreme Court's cases construing McNary is that this kind of claim is not cognizable in Section 1983 because it attacks the functioning of a state tax system. And McNary said that as a matter of interpretation of Section 1983, that kind of claim is not cognizable. And the court reiterated that in National Private Truck Council versus Oklahoma Tax Commission, sort of reconceiving the principle as a construction of Section 1983 and its scope and reach, and excluding from its scope this kind of claim.
But again, Your Honor, what is this kind of claim? This is a constitutional claim. And if Section 1983 is no longer available...
The claims in those cases were as well.
You can argue with the Supreme Court about whether McNary was correctly decided, but you cannot argue to us that McNary was incorrectly decided. Okay?
Okay. If I may, then...
Let me just ask you one fact. You've alleged that your client's PTAB appeal was, quote, red flag.
Yes, Your Honor.
I have no idea what you mean by that. And could you be specific?
Yes. The plaintiffs were told by a source inside the Board of Review that their complaint and the Board of Review's decision on their property was red flagged, and meaning the Board of Review had already contacted PTAB and that nothing would be done to change the Board of Review's decision.
Okay. Now, that's an elaboration on what's in your complaint, right?
Yes, sir.
Which we allow on an appeal from a motion to dismiss. But you're saying that was language from somebody inside the PTAB?
Inside the Board of Review.
Board of Review, sorry. Okay. Thanks.
If I may just finish very quickly, The Butts opinion limited quasi-judicial immunity to federal hearing officers to persons subject to the same restraints as judges and to perform an adjudicatory function. In this instance, the Board of Review defendants are not at all similar to judges. And neither is their process at the Board of Review, because it's not adversarial. There's no right to discovery in this case. Certainly, there was no right to attend the meeting before the decision was made. There was no right to call witnesses. There was no right to cross-examine. The rules of evidence did not apply, nor were any rulings or findings of fact issued. The judiciary, by contrast, is committed by training and philosophy to impartially administer the law. It does not telescope the functions of an investigator, jury, prosecutor, and interested biased party into one role. At the Board of Review, all those functions are telescoped into one role, and there's no check or balance against separating any one of them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Silva. Mr. Bertocchi.
Morning, Your Honors. My name is Joel Bertocchi, and I'm arguing today on behalf of all of the various defendants, individual and the board. I want to get to the questions about McNary, but before I do, I want to spend a little time on the individual defendants and what I call Hyde. In response to a question the court asked, you cannot agree with the plaintiffs in this case without overruling Hyde. In the ways that quasi-judicial immunity are applied, the Tazewell Board is indistinguishable from the Cook County Board. The statutes, which we quoted in our brief, are virtually identical. They perform the same function. Ms. DeSilva says, oh, the Tazewell Board conducted its own investigation, but in the district court, the plaintiffs were complaining that that's what the Cook Board was doing in this case, that they called everybody in to find out what the issue was in response to some degree to these media questions. So I think Hyde does dictate the result in this case, and you can walk through the Butts test, but the court cited Butts in Hyde and presumably did that already. Moving on to the question of the board's amenability to suit, McNary wasn't raised in the briefs for a couple of reasons. One is it wasn't raised below, and I didn't feel that I could do that. If the court is interested in hearing from us,
The doctrine has to do with comity.
I understand.
And it's something that we have to worry about whether the parties raise it or not, in my view.
I understand, Your Honor, and if I would invite the court to ask us to file some supplemental briefs on this, we could do so in fairly short order. The other aspect of it is it wasn't really, I guess, perhaps as clear to me until the plaintiffs filed their brief. It wasn't as clear to me as it would have been just looking at the district court record, that what they were doing was really focusing on the system as opposed to their case. That what they were arguing was that the tax remedies in Illinois are categorically inadequate. And I agree that McNary rejects that claim. I also think that it's been rejected as a matter of judicial immunity in cases like Tobin for Governor, which say that it isn't a question of political influence. It's a question of where the officials fit in the structure and whether they're independent of the assessor's office. It's a different office. But I do think that McNary would apply, and we would appreciate the opportunity to address that.
Went 10 days on it?
Just simultaneous, 10 days.
Yeah. The court will grant both sides 10 days for simultaneous.
Something short and to the point.
And this will presumably apply to the number three case as well, the
yes.
CAFRA.
Right.
Appeal.
We could file, well, I guess we'll just do the same thing separately.
It helps if we have separate pieces of paper to file in each document.
I understand, Your Honor, but I'll just give you a hint. You might not have to read both.
I probably won't.
Oh, I'm sure you're very thorough. Going on, so I think we can address that best in those briefs. Going on to the argument with respect to the board's quasi-judicial immunity, I recognize in this argument that I'm swimming a little bit against the tide, but I think there are good reasons to do so. And I think the argument can make it to the shore, and now I'll leave that metaphor alone. The first is that the argument that we're making rests on the functional approach that is taken with respect to quasi-judicial immunity. In the Owen case and the Hernandez case, which are the two cases that the plaintiffs and that Judge Cannelli most relied on, they were talking about a different kind of immunity asserted against totally different sorts of claims. This appeal, this is a, what the plaintiffs are trying to do in this case is they're trying to give them, they don't like the two appeals methods that the state of Illinois makes available to them. What they would prefer is essentially an appeal on steroids. They get to go to federal court and they get to take discovery. Other property tax owners don't get to do that. The Cook County Board of Review adjudicates hundreds of thousands of appeals every year, and they do so according to well-established processes that have been going on for a long time. But the plaintiffs want to take up that decision, and they want to take it up in federal court, and they want to take depositions, and they want to take interrogatories. They made that take paper discovery. They made that clear right up to their last brief that they filed in this court. This appeal is an attempt, this lawsuit by them, as far as the board and the individual defendants are concerned, is an attempt to perfectly duplicate the relief that they would be able to get from PTAB or from the Cook County Circuit Court. And those decisions, by the way, are appealable to the Illinois appellate courts and ultimately the Illinois Supreme Court. So it's a whole PTAB and the Circuit Court are only one step in the process that is made available. There is no Supreme Court case that says that the immunity that is accorded to adjudicators doesn't apply to municipalities. I think the issue comes up.
Let me ask you about the concluding lines of Monell.
Okay.
We express no views on the scope of any municipal immunity beyond holding that municipal bodies sued under Section 1983 cannot be entitled to an absolute immunity. Lest our decision that such bodies are subject to suit under Section 1983 be drained of meaning. You've cited a number of cases in which this immunity has been extended to state agencies of various kinds.
Sure.
Which really doesn't advance the ball very much.
Not on that issue, no.
You cited one Louisiana district court opinion that seemed to extend quasi-judicial absolute immunity to a local government entity.
I understand.
But This is the problem I'm facing.
Well, the Monell, I mean, again, Monell, like Owen, was facing a different kinds of claims and a different kind of government action. But what we have here is an immunity that the court has said is based on function. This court and other courts have said over and over, what they're doing matters, not who's doing it. Mm-hmm. And if that immunity is going to work, if you're going to extend an immunity that previously that in its original conception was extended to courts which were run by states or the federal government, you're going to end up extending that immunity to municipal bodies.
Okay,
but
so,
having done
such
that,
as, okay,
such
let
as,
me let me yes. ask you, for example, how your reasoning would apply to police disciplinary commissions, firefighter disciplinary commissions, and a host of other local administrative bodies that in essence, adjudicate individual questions. That would seem to sweep awfully broadly, wouldn't it?
There are a lot of quasi-judicial bodies out there, and I guess, you know, to some degree it would depend on the particular body, and you might have to go through the test. But assuming that it passed the test, I think as to claims that were directed at asking a federal court to reverse a decision of one of those bodies, assuming, of course, that there was not some other remedy that would allow that same relief to be granted, then yes, I think that's where the rule would go.
That would be a pretty stunning restriction on Section 1983 litigation against municipal bodies that the Supreme Court has said we can't do, and no other circuit has done, apparently. I assume you've looked hard.
We have, Your Honor, and I think it's still appropriate if you have the confluence of factors that you have in this case. If you have plaintiffs who are seeking specifically to ask the federal court to reverse a decision, and if you have a situation, if one of those bodies, a police or fire commission, if there was nowhere you could go from that decision, mm-hmm. then I think.
Or how about, I mean, school boards? We're talking about every, we see. Teachers who claim they have been suspended, fired, disciplined in other ways for speaking out on a subject of public concern. With school boards, and school boards do that through, you know, an adversarial hearing. There's usually counsel, witnesses, a record. Certainly looks adjudicative.
It could be.
But we and I think every other circuit I know of entertain those cases. we couldn't under your theory.
Well, Your Honor, I think, again, you also have to take a look at what it is the plaintiffs in those cases tried to do. Because the problem that the board has here is that getting the individual defendants dismissed really didn't help as to this aspect of immunity.
That's why McNary helps you.
Right. That's why I understand, although that's a taxing case, and that would be fine. But that is the essence of our argument, is that if we believe it is clear that although quasi-judicial immunity is designed to protect individual defendants from liability, that it has a protective function as to the intrusion and the distraction that the plaintiffs contemplate in this case. It isn't, if they think their property taxes were set wrong, there are two places they can go.
How much of the doctrine, though, is based on the idea that the intrusiveness of federal suit chills the activities, the adjudicative activities of the adjudicators, and how much of it is based on protecting from money judgments?
Your Honor, I would say, and it isn't just a matter of chilling, it's a matter of requiring them to come in and explain themselves when their own system doesn't require them to explain themselves any further. But as to, you know, I think you could look at the cases, you could argue that the aspect the courts have talked about the most is the financial liability.
Right.
But that doesn't leave out the aspect of it that says that a judge, and, you know, it's a lot of older cases when it was really only judges you were talking about, but they say that you can't require a judge to come in and explain himself over and above whatever he has to do to make a ruling that could then be contested in whatever direct appeal. The courts talk, I think it was, I don't know if it's in Forrester or Bradley, an inappropriate collateral attack. That's why this case is a little bit different from others, because that's really all that's in the plaintiff's complaint, is our property taxes were set wrong. That's all there is as to the board and as to the individual defendants. If the court has nothing further, we look forward to our supplemental brief. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rataki. Ms. De Silva?
Thank you. The Board of Review's process in this case was very much like Lewis Carroll's court in Alice in Wonderland, where the Queen decided that there would be a sentence read before the verdict. That was not a court of law any more than the Board of Review is. Of all the judicial repeals of the Civil Rights Act, of almost by 1,000 cuts that the judiciary has made, it must not make this last one, because neither the defendants nor the Board of Review are functionally at all similar to actual judges. Justice Posner, in his dissent in Forrester, pointed out that immunity was, quote, strong medicine, not even, he thought, to be given to judges in hiring and firing decisions. Justice Douglas, in his dissent in Pearson versus Ray, said that he didn't think that judicial immunity should even apply to the Civil Rights Act, because he said that the 42nd Congress that enacted the Civil Rights Act could not have been unaware that its members, that members even of the judiciary, were implicated in a systematic breakdown of the application of constitutional rights to black people in the South. There is a systematic breakdown of constitutional rights with this entity. It is the last entity that this court should give judicial immunity to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fellow. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed.